take a last drink with Roz in the bowl.
This is Ryan, and you're listening to CKUW, to the program Barking Dog, 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Have a good one.
This is a poem about a dog I see walking around North Beach all the time. The dog trots freely in the street and sees reality, and the things he sees are bigger than himself, and the things he sees are his reality. Drunks in doorways, moons on trees. The dog trots freely through the street, and the things he sees are smaller than himself. Fish on newsprint, ants in holes, chickens in Chinatown windows, their heads a block away. The dog trots freely in the street, and the things he smells smell something like himself. The dog trots freely in the street, past puddles and babies, cats and cigars, pool rooms and policemen. He doesn't hate cops. He merely has no use for them. And he goes past them and past the dead cows hung up whole in front of the San Francisco meat market. He would rather eat a tender cow than a tough policeman, though either might do. And he goes past the Romeo Ravioli factory, and past Coit's Tower, and past Congressman Doyle of the Un-American Activities Committee. He's afraid of Coit's Tower, but he's not afraid of Congressman Doyle, although what he hears is very discouraging, very depressing, very absurd to a sad young dog like himself, to a serious dog like himself. But he has his own free world to live in, his own fleas to eat. He will not be muzzled. Congressman Doyle is just another fire hydrant to him. The dog trots freely in the street and has his own dog's life to live and to think about and to reflect upon, touching and tasting and testing everything, investigating everything without benefit of perjury. A real realist with a real tale to tell and a real tale to tell it with. A real live barking democratic dog engaged in real free enterprise with something to say about ontology, something to say about reality and how to see it and how to hear it, with his head cocked sideways at street corners as if he is always just about to have his picture taken for Victor Records, listening for his master's voice and looking like a living question mark into the great gramophone of puzzling existence with its wondrous hollow horn, which always seems just about to spout forth some victorious answer to everything.
We just heard Lawrence Ferlinghetti with Dog. He was a poet, artist, and activist from New York who founded City Lights Bookstore in San Francisco. That poem appears on his 1958 album, Tentative Description of a Dinner to Promote the Impeachment of President Eisenhower, and other poems. Before that, we heard Canray Fontenot with Hey Hey Blues. He was considered one of the greatest Creole fiddle players. He first learned to play on a fiddle he made out of a cigar box. Fontenot was a member of several string bands throughout the 30s, 40s, and 50s, though he worked primarily as a rice farmer during his life. In the 1960s, he performed outside of Louisiana for the first time at the Newport Folk Festival in Rhode Island. It was there that he recorded an album for the producer Dick Spotswood, and from there he began appearing at festivals around the world. That one's from the 1992 compilation album Louisiana Hot Sauce Creole Style, recorded between 1971 and 1991. Before that, we heard C.A. and Sonny with Rosin the Bow. Here's one now from Farron, a musician and poet from British Columbia. This one, The Cart, is from a 2009 album, Boulder.
The strap that holds the cart in rain has been let loose. But wearing thin, but biting through the shifting power leans to you, and the cart is on a wheel. I've wept with joy for the things I've done, and I've wept as hard for what I left undone, for what I left undone, for what I couldn't deem mine, for what I thought was yours, and so I drew the line, and the cart is on a wheel. And the wheel is on a hill. I saw someone fall. I saw another one flail. I saw an arm dig deep where there was no rail. Well, there is no rail, and there's no because. Though the body be strong, the spirit is lost, and the cart is on a wheel. And the wheel is on a hill. And the hill is shifting sand. And inside these logs we stand. Souls to keep. If we are love, I hope we do not sleep. I hope we do not sleep. I hope we stay our ground. Hold fast to the mother as she turns us round. Hold fast to the mother. Hold fast. Hold fast to the mother. Hold fast to the mother. Hold fast. Hold fast to the mother.
Some fading flower then would soon rise up and grow green again. This is my last and final will. Good luck to all of you. Joe Hill.
I suppose that I came to history with a point of view. I came to the teaching and writing of history with a point of view already, because I didn't go directly from high school to college to graduate school to teaching, because I had a number of years between high school and college. At the age of 18, I went to work in a shipyard and worked there for 3 years. I didn't do it as a sociological experiment. Go around with a tape recorder and talk to my fellow shipyard workers. How does it feel to work in a shipyard? But I came from the kind of background, the kind of family where kids didn't go to college, where at the age of 18 you went to work so you could bring some money home, even if it was very little money home to the family. So I worked in a shipyard for 3 years, and I think it's fair to say that I have a chapter in my this memoir that was referred to, which is called "You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train." I have a chapter in it called "Growing Up Class Conscious," and I suppose I grew up class conscious. That is, I grew up aware that most people in society worked on the kind of job I worked on, that is not in a shipyard maybe, it didn't matter what they worked at, but they worked at a job that they weren't crazy about, but that they had to work at. And they might be blue-collar workers, and they might be white-collar workers, or they might be steel workers, or they might be advertising copywriters, but they still were mostly working at jobs which alienated them from the process of work and alienated them from the product of their work. And so I was aware that this kind of work existed, and I was aware that there seemed to be some people in society who didn't do that kind of work. And I very early on became aware that there was no particular relationship between how hard you worked and what were the rewards that you got as a result of this work. I never believed from, and I don't know when this started, but I was very young. I was no longer susceptible to that which you hear a lot around you, and which I remember some of my students at Boston University would express, and something that is a recurring theme in American society, and that is if you work hard enough, you will, as they say, make it. You will become prosperous and successful if you work hard. If you haven't become prosperous and successful, it must mean you haven't worked very hard. And I saw my father work very hard all his life and have very little to show for it. So my mother worked very hard. And lots of people like them. And then I saw people in society who were successful and who were prosperous, and I couldn't figure out what they did. Either they didn't seem to be working very hard, or they were working very hard at producing terrible things. And they were very well paid for it. So yes, I was class conscious at an early age. The word class conscious doesn't appear a lot in American society. It's an attempt to... it's sort of an embarrassing word. Our society is not supposed to be that way. Brazil, yes. Ecuador, who knows? Saudi Arabia, there are societies with rich elites and poor masses, but not America. And you hear politicians accusing one another of appealing to class prejudices. And politicians are very careful not to be accused of that. I remember during the 1988 election campaign, do you remember Bush and Dukakis? it's hard to remember that, something like. But it will be on the next New York Times quiz. But at one point, Bush accused Dukakis of arousing class hostility. Which really surprised me. I live in Massachusetts. Dukakis was the governor of Massachusetts. And the idea that Dukakis would appeal to class hostility somehow didn't ring true to me. That he would provoke class conflict? No. That he would provoke anything?
We just heard Howard Zinn with Class Consciousness from a 1995 lecture at Reed College in Portland, Oregon. He was a historian from New York City who focused on labor history, civil rights, and the anti-war movement, and is known particularly for his 1980 book, A People's History of the United States. Before that, we heard Joe Hickerson with Joe Hill's Last Will. Hickerson was a folk singer, song leader, and folklorist from Illinois, and served as librarian and director of the Archive of Folk Song at the Library of Congress for 35 years. Joe Hill was a Swedish-American labor activist and songwriter known for songs like There Is Power in a Union, Casey Jones, The Union Scab, and The Preacher and the Slave, through which he coined the phrase Pie in the Sky. Hill was convicted of the murders of a former police officer and his son in 1914 after a controversial trial and was executed in 1915. The lyrics of that song are a poem by Hill, who wrote it as his will on the night before his execution. Ethel Rame put it to music in 1961. Before that, we heard Farron with The Cart. Here's one now from Patty Rosemon, Frank Rosemon, and Odie Rosemon. This recording was made by Cheryl and David Evans in Senatobia, Mississippi, in August of 1973. Patty was best known in her community as a quilt maker, though she agreed to record some church songs along with her husband and son. The lyrics of this song, I Heard the Voice of Jesus Say, were composed by Scottish clergyman Horatius Bonar in the mid-19th century. Rosemon sings the song in the long meter style, in which the song leader sings each line followed by a slow repetition by the congregation.
I heard the voice of Jesus sing. I heard the I can't. sad, I found in him a resting place. I found in him a resting place. He have made me glad when he have made me glad. What's down there?
If I had wings like Nora's dove, I'd fly up the river to the one I love. Fare thee well, felt a ache and pain. Fare thee well, oh honey, fare thee well. Woman, I love like a cannonball. Fare thee well, oh honey, fare thee well. One of these mornings
This is Alex Cohut, and you're listening to my favorite radio show. This is Barking Dog at Winnipeg CKUW 95.9 FM with your host, Juliana Young. ¶¶
Castletown, an aeroplane, neon lights and dusty trains, empty-headed, heavy-handed, I chase the light. Empty faces in the night move me to the morning light. Oh, how time flies. Time was when all was black and white, but I'm slowly getting it over. I'm beginning to see, slowly getting it over. Soon I'm bound to be free. Smiles and handshakes everywhere. Listen to the people cheer. President's a good man now, he don't tell no lies. Newspapers, posters all around taught me things without a sound. Oh, how time flies. Time was when I
David Campbell with Time Was When. He's a Guyanese-Canadian musician based in Vancouver who began playing professionally in the 1960s. That's off his 1972 album, Sunwheel. Before that, Dave Van Ronk with Dink's Song. He was a member of the Greenwich Village folk scene in New York City and was known as the Mayor of McDougal Street, which was where practically every coffee house was located in New York in the 60s. That song is also commonly known as Fare Thee Well, though it was originally recorded from a woman named Dink by John Lomax in 1909. Before that, we heard Patty, Frank, and Odie Rosemond with I Heard the Voice of Jesus Say. You're listening to Barking Dog on CKOW. I'm your host, Juliana Young, and we'll hear one now from Box Fox. He's a musician from New York City who began playing the blues in the 1950s. This one, Black Mountain Blues, is from the 1994 album Primarily Blues.
Tried to love my woman, but she couldn't understand. tried to love my woman, but she couldn't understand. Yeah, I tried to love my sweet woman, but that woman couldn't understand. Now I know she realizing trouble since she found another man. Bless you everywhere you go. Bye bye, sweet baby. Baby, bye bye. Carry you. Leaving town, sweet baby, I can't carry you. Should I never see you anymore, may God bless you everywhere you go. Bye bye, sweet baby, baby, bye bye. Everywhere you go. Bye-bye, sweet baby. Baby, bye-bye.
Job someday soon, going with him someday soon. My parents cannot stand him, 'cause he rides the rodeo. My father says that he will leave me crying, but I would follow him right now down the toughest road I know. Someday soon, going with him someday soon. When he comes to call my boy, ain't got a good word to say. Maybe it's 'cause he was just as wild in his younger days. So blow you, old blue northern, blow my love to me. He's driving in tonight from someday soon, going with him someday soon, someday soon, going with him someday soon.
That was Kara Luft from Winnipeg with Someday Soon, an Ian and Sylvia song first recorded in 1963. Before that, we heard Steve James with Bye Bye Baby Blues. He was a blues musician from New York City who began learning guitar at the age of 12 and later moved around the states, hosting a radio show in Tennessee where he played with Furry Lewis and Lum Guffin, and performing in Texas as a solo artist. That's from his 2003 album, Fast Texas. It's a song by Little Hat Jones, who released it in 1930. Before that, we heard Box Fox with Black Mountain Blues. We'll hear one now from Nancy Richardson from the 1995 album Heartbeat, Voices of First Nations Women. Richardson is an Indigenous singer and Karuk language specialist from California. This one, Lizard His Song, is a Karuk song associated with the creation story, which tells that the lizard was once told not to make human beings because they wouldn't get along, but the lizard did anyway. The liner notes for the album state that the song encourages people to settle disputes and live in harmony with one another.
Chimu chumu panikwa waranikupesh karuma pantipu anikupeshana Chimu chumu panikwa waranikupesh karuma pantipu anikupeshana
Pretty mama, Lord, now you treat me like a dog. I said, Lord, I've been your dog. Lord, ever since I've been your man. I said, I've been your dog. Lord, ever since I've been your man. Because, well, I ain't going to be your not rolling stone no more. Now, my baby, I'm about to dump, ba-ba-ba-ba.
We just heard the Quilters Guild with Texas Gals. They're an Ontario-based duo formed by guitarist Mike T. Kerr and multi-instrumentalist Lotus White a few months ago. That's a traditional tune associated with southwestern Virginia and northwestern North Carolina. It was first recorded by the Hillbillies in 1927. Before that, we heard Sun Sims 4 with Pearly May Blues. They consisted of Muddy Waters, Delta Blues fiddler Sun Sims, mandolinist Lewis Ford, and guitarist Percy Thomas. That recording is one made by the folklorist Alan Lomax at Waters' home in 1941, when Lomax traveled to the Mississippi plantation to record the various musicians who lived there. And before that, we heard Nancy Richardson with Lizard, His Song. I've got another tune for you before I leave you for the week, but first I'd like to remind you that you can access the archives for this show and many others online anytime at ckuw.ca/programs. I post a high-quality recording of the show to stream or download, and the notes I make about the music we play over at my website, julianacyoung.com. You can sign up for my newsletter there as well. You can also find a list of themed episodes we've done over the years. If you want to get in touch, you can reach me at ckuwbarkingdog@gmail.com or follow me on Blue Sky at barkingdogckuw. I'll leave you with one from the Lonesome Ace String Band, a contemporary string band based in Toronto. This one, Crow River, is from their latest album, Big Wing, which came out in October. It's one of three fiddle tunes celebrating the three rivers that flow into Belmont Lake in Havelock, Ontario. And it was written and recorded while on the shores of the lake. Take care.
If We Must Die is the poem that makes me a poet among colored Americans. Yet, frankly, I have never regarded myself as a Negro poet. I have always felt that my gift of song was something bigger than the narrow confining limits of any one people and its problems. Even though many of my themes were racial, I wrote my poems to make a universal appeal. When If We Must Die was first published in 1919, it was denounced by many conservative white leaders as evidence of a new spirit among Negroes. Senator Henry Cabot Lodge read it into the records of Congress. But times change, and so I was not at all surprised when during the Nazi air blitz on Britain, an English anthologist requested the use of If We Must Die for an anthology of verse. But I was surprised by what happened when I turned on my radio one morning in 1944. A commentator was telling about the death of a young white American soldier on the Russian front. The commentator went on to say that the youth was a lover of poetry, and he proceeded to read one of five poems which had been discovered on the dead youth's body. And he read If We Must Die. The commentator did not mention the name of the author, Claude McKay, nor did he state that the poem was the work of a colored man. Perhaps he did not know, but I felt profoundly gratified and justified. I felt assurance that If We Must Die was just what I intended it to be, a universal poem. And wherever men are pressed with their backs against the wall, abused, outraged, and murdered, whether they are minorities or nations, black or brown or yellow or white, Catholics or Protestants or pagans fighting against the terror, If We Must Die could be appropriately read. If we must die, let it not be like hogs, hunted and penned in an inglorious pot, while round us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our accursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us, though dead. O kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for the 1,000 blows, deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderers, cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying but fighting back.
CKUW 95.9 FM, listener-driven radio in Winnipeg.
Generous support to CKUW 95.9 is provided by Into the Music, quality collectible music since 1987. Into the Music is located in the Exchange District, 245 McDermott at the corner of King Street. To receive our twice weekly newsletter, call the store or go online at intothemusic.ca to sign up. And kick off your Friday evenings at 7:30 with us at our in-store stage for free all-ages shows featuring local bands and performers.